today we have the venerable Coach Stan Johnson of Loyola Marymount University. Coach Johnson began his career by leading Southern Utah to its first ever NCAA tourney appearance. He later transferred to Bemidji State, where he found his footing as an assistant coach and got his first opportunity. He's gone on to have great success throughout his career with stops at Cal State Northridge, Utah, Drake, Arizona State, and Marquette. And now he has his first head coaching position at Loyola Marymount, where he's helping lead the program back to the NCAA tournament for the first time since 1990 with Bo Kimble and Hank Gathers. Coach Johnson.
I read a pretty interesting story about you, Stan, where one of your first experiences at recess, you kicked a basketball just out of reflex. And then from then on, you realized, I want to do this thing to, you know, do the basketball thing. So how did that kind of evolution happen? How did you get involved in the game and you know, how'd you get your start?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Liberia, West Africa, and was there till I was 10. My dad is from there. My mom is from the States. And in Liberia, we actually played soccer and tennis. You know, that those were the sports. And good thing is both those sports are really good for your feet, good footwork.
Absolutely.
And then a war broke out and we moved, and we actually ended up settling down in Salt Lake City, Utah. And I always tell the story, you know, first day of recess, I'm like the only black kid in the school at that point. You know, Utah's become a little more diverse since then, but, you know, everybody assumed I could play. And, you know, it was more, you know, I've blown the story up a little bit. I didn't really kick the ball, but I thought about it, you know. They picked me first and I couldn't dribble. Yeah. You know, I couldn't shoot. I couldn't do anything. I became the honorary last pick of every recess for a year. And I made a commitment, you know, I was going to learn the game, and I kind of taught myself. And we lived pretty close to the elementary, and every day in the summer, I'd walk over there, man, and just spend hours there, you know, working on the game. And for me, there's two things. I didn't want to get picked last anymore. And I, you know, I felt like if I could play the game, it would help with friendships and a connection. And it's amazing what that's done, you know, not only in a time of being a 10, 11 year old and trying to adjust to a whole culture shift and make new friends, but I've seen it in my own career, you know, what the game can bring and the kind of people you can connect with. And, you know, I've really used it as a vehicle. I was, you know, got good enough to get a scholarship and play Division I basketball, Southern Utah. And I always share this, you know, my family and I would go on vacation to St. George or Las Vegas, and you would drive between Salt Lake City and Vegas, and right to your left on I-45 South, you know, there was a small town called Cedar City in this school. You could see it, says Southern Utah. And I remember saying so many times, there's no way I could ever go to a school at a place like this. And sure enough, that was where I ended up being. And it was a great experience. We were, you know, able to take a team that had never been to the tournament and win the league. We had a heck of a team that year, beat Utah to break a, I don't know how many game winning streak they had at home. I mean, we were one of the better teams in the country. We lost to Boston College in New York. Troy Bell hit a three late to go up two, and they got us. But, you know, it's been a great journey, and it certainly has been a different one. You know, I don't know how many guys from Africa actually even coaching as the head coach in college basketball. You know, I'd love to see that stat, but you know, I'm thankful for my journey. It's taken me a lot of different places. I've seen it so many different ways, and I've had to come up differently. And here we are today.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned soccer and footwork and stuff, because we always talk about the guys like Joel Embiid and Jokic, and a guy coming up now, Charles Bassey, who I love his footwork mixed with his size and strength kind of thing. So I think soccer is always a great place for people to start. Did you have was there someone in Utah that you had as a mentor that kind of like helped, you know, teach you the ropes and the fundamentals, or did you just kind of just teach yourself kind of thing? Because there wasn't YouTube back then. Like, me and Andy were on YouTube as kids.
I mean, back then it was different. Back then you went out and, you know, my dad put up a hoop at some point, and we got a house in our front yard, and I was self-taught. You would watch, and you'd go out there and try to create. I mean, even then, there weren't a bunch of trainers and all the stuff you have going on now. I wish there was. I would have ended up maybe being a better player. But did you? I just taught myself, you know, what I saw, you know. So my parents were working, trying to put food on the table and create a life for us. So it's not like, you know, my dad didn't grow up, you know, playing basketball. He was a soccer player. You know, so it was just unconventional. It was different. And I had to work for every inch.
Yeah. And this is back when like the NBA isn't necessarily on TV every night like it is now. Did you have like a player that you emulated or you wanted to try to model your game after growing up, or were you not really tuned into the NBA at that point?
No, I mean, I got pretty tuned in, you know, pretty quick. And, you know, living in Utah, the Jazz are huge.
Yeah.
So immediately I became a diehard Jazz fan, and Karl Malone and John Stockton. And, you know, I kind of grew up, you know, idolizing those guys. And I was actually at the game when Jordan hit that shot. You know, it's kind of interesting, you know, like you're at the game, you didn't realize in the moment what a historical time that was. But I was a huge Karl Malone guy. And a Utah fan, a Jazz fan. I still am today. My brother-in-law was most recently an assistant coach for them. He's now the associate head coach of the Knicks. You know, so that was an organization I've always admired. Again, they've kind of come out of nothing and have, you know, had to find creative ways to be successful and try to compete for championships. But that was kind of the organization that I really grew close to.
Absolutely. Hey, Coach, and I got a question just as far as, you know, you're the new kid, you're coming over from Africa, as far as, you know, leadership skills that you've kind of taken into today. Have you been able to utilize the skills that you learned, you know, as a kid, you know, with the culture shock and, you know, being able to connect with people and find new friends? Do you use that, you know, in recruiting and your relationship with people now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I get asked oftentimes, why is it so easy for you to you connect with so many different types of people, and it's not just because it came naturally. It's because of my experience. You know, you grew up in West Africa. It's a different culture, although it's a lot of it is like America, but you know, it's different. And you know, you move from there and you go to Salt Lake City, where a lot of times in any environment, any room I walked in, I was the only Black guy, and you had to navigate that, you know. I grew up in a home, my mom's Cuban. You know, I tell people all the time, my house when we came over was like the United Nations, all kinds of different people. And I didn't really appreciate that until I got older. And you understand your comfort in any room, in any environment, any setting. And that's played a pivotal role in my career, you know, to be able to walk into a house in Ephraim, Utah, and walk into a house in South Central LA, and walk into a house in Bemidji, Minnesota, and Bolivar, Missouri, and still have the same comfort level and be able to relate to different kinds of people. You know, that's been critical, because that's what this thing is now. You know, it's being relatable, and it's relational, and being able to form strong bonds with not just people who look like you or have the same backgrounds. And even the kids you coach, the guys that I coach, all of them come from different situations. And to be able to relate and understand, I think makes you someone people can gravitate to a little more, trust a little more. So again, I'm really thankful for all the experiences. And for me, they were all good experiences in terms of, you know, your escape of war and, you know, you're starting life over and literally at the bottom, you know. But as I look back now, I'm really grateful for the path, because you understand deeper what people go through, and you can relate with them a little more. And when you tell them, hey, I understand, you truly understand, you know. So that's been awesome.
So when you got that scholarship offer from Southern Utah, what was that was that kind of recruiting experience like, in terms of like, you know, you realizing like, oh shoot, like I can do this, like this is a future for me kind of thing? What was that experience like?
Yeah, I was getting recruited by, you know, some low majors. You know, I think maybe Utah State was maybe the only kind of mid-major school that kind of dabbed at me. My first letter I've ever gotten, this is a true story, was from Loyola Marymount in the mail.
That's incredible. Comes full circle.
Yeah, I mean, my first letter that came to me in the mail was from Loyola Marymount. But, you know, that process was good. You know, at the end of it, you know, Southern Utah wanted me more than anybody else. And they believed in me. And it was, you know, pretty simple, you know, in terms of this is where I need to be. And I felt like it was the best option, the best fit. And again, we went there and we were able to do something that hadn't been done, you know, which is incredible.
Yeah, and you were a captain on that team too. So obviously, like Andy was saying, some of that leadership and like, you know, life experiences already kind of paying off in terms of getting the respect of your teammates and also, you know, building relationships with them and helping leading them to something they've never done before. So that was incredible. But I'm curious what happened in terms of like, you know, your decision to transfer to Bemidji State after, you know, NCAA tourney and being a captain. Like, was there like a situational, like whether it's like, you know, playing wise or just kind of your career in terms of you wanted to get into coaching, because you started coaching there right after too?
Yeah, well, I didn't, I didn't transfer right away. So we went to the tournament. I came back the next year. And, you know, my career there, I battled a lot of, you know, I had huge tendonitis issues in both knees. And it really flared on really bad. Again, after that year, we went to the tournament. You know, I was able to barely get through that season. You know, and that's when things start to, you go, man, I got to start looking for another path. And, you know, the year we went to the tournament, there was a guy by the name of Jeff Gio, who was an assistant on the on the staff, and he got a job at Bemidji. So after the tournament, I came back to Southern Utah and was, you know, going to graduate, pretty much had everything, was almost done with graduation. And he said, hey, why don't you just come up, finish a few of the classes you have left here at Bemidji and play for me for a year. And when you get done, you know, we'll help you get into coaching. And that was kind of the route I wanted to take anyways. And it was an opportunity to, you know, go experience something different and, you know, see the big picture, you know, long-term what I wanted to do. And, you know, I kind of, that was really what was behind that.
I think too, like just as far as, you know, a young coach, you know, myself even, you know, kind of coming up and trying to figure out and navigate this. You know, I read somewhere where it said, you know, if you want to go back and coach, go back to where you played or, you know, where you're from, you know, and it seems like that's something to be true. As far as like for any advice for, you know, young coaches that are kind of coming up, you know, that may not have played at that Division I level or even here in the U.S., what would you kind of give them advice as far as to reaching out and kind of beginning their coaching career?
Well, the first thing I would tell them is, you know, it's really important to understand who you are. Mm-hmm. You know, like most guys in this business, and I shouldn't say most, there's a lot of people who don't know who they are. And they're trying to be something that they're not, or they're trying to aspire to be at a level that maybe doesn't fit them. Mm-hmm. Figure out who you are and what matches your personality. And if you're going to be in coaching, don't chase it just for the money. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like some guys, I tell all the time, I think I'd be a terrible high school coach. Okay. I think high school coaches are outstanding. Uh-huh. And there's so many things they have to do and what they have to deal with. I think I'd be horrible. Like my personality, I'm not built for that. Uh-huh. Right? There's some high school coaches that are terrific high school coaches that aren't built to be Division I coaches. There's some people more in the D2. What is it that you want to do? Yeah. And if you want to be a great D1, you want to be a D1 coach, go for it. If you want to be a D2 coach, go for it. You know, but know what best fits your personality. And then chase that. But don't chase, you know, like the glamour.
Right.
Don't chase the glitz. That's not why you get into coaching. You know, I have a lot of buddies, man. I want to be a head coach, man. I want to be a head coach. Okay, well then take a D2 job. And those are hard too, by the way, to get. But try to be a D. Nah, I don't want to do that, man. I want to make this kind of, it's okay, then you don't really want to be a head coach.
Yeah.
Right? You want to be a certain kind of head coach.
Yeah.
Then say that.
Yeah.
So know who you are. And the second thing I would tell them, run your race. you know, sometimes we live this comparison mindset. And look at Johnny. Johnny's moved so fast. It's not about how fast you get there. It's how long you can stay. And I've seen a lot of guys who get places really quick. Mm-hmm. And doesn't mean you're going to last. And if you're always comparing, you're going to have no joy. Comparison is the thief of all joy. And everybody has a different race, and everybody's going to get them going to get there differently. And just because it takes you a little longer doesn't mean that you're not going to be a success. And it doesn't mean that what you're going through is not preparing you, or it doesn't mean you're not having success already. Sometimes we think success is just when we get to the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
The success is in climbing it.
Definitely.
So run your race. And then three, you got to understand, like, the big time, and I say all, is not a place. It's who you are. You know, certain people want this name across their chest so they can go, look at me, I've arrived. Well, I would tell you, I come from the dirt of the dirt in the business. And that's not a knock on anywhere I've been. Mm-hmm. Started my career at Bemidji State, man. Nobody can even pronounce it. It's the most northern university in the United States. When I put the polo on as a coach, you couldn't tell me that was the greatest school on earth.
Yeah.
It was like working at Duke for me.
Yeah.
You know, and that place didn't dictate who I was. I'm not saying in a like a humble way. I always felt like I'm big time because of how you carry yourself and how you approach your craft. The place doesn't make you. You make the place. And if you have that kind of personality, now you're not job hunting and job seeking. You know, you're doing a great job. And in time, whatever you want to advance, that'll happen. Well, those are the three things. Know who you are. Mm-hmm. Run your own race and make the big time where you're at.
Yeah.
You know, those are the three things that I would tell people.
Definitely. And I think honestly, people can apply that, you know, to all parts of their life, you know. And you're so right with the comparison, you know, taking away that joy. You know, sometimes, you know, even in life myself, I've gotten stuck in that. So appreciate you sharing that, because that really is a great takeaway, you know. And you know, kind of as you progressed, you know, moving forward as an assistant, you know, what was it, you know, that you would give some advice, like as far as on the bench, what were some things that, you know, your responsibilities were?
Well, what I would tell an assistant coach, and I share with all my friends and anybody who would listen, is don't ever get pigeonholed. Mm-hmm. Don't get pigeonholed. And don't put yourself in a box and get labeled. You know, like if you take a flower and you have a vase and you put the vase over the flower conforms to the shape of the vase. But if you flip the vase over and you put water in it, the flower grows. A lot of people don't grow in the business because they allow people, or they allow themselves, to be flipped over and have the vase put over them. So their growth is stifled. Don't be labeled as a recruiter. Because if you're labeled as a recruiter, then people don't think you can coach and teach.
Yeah.
Don't just be labeled as an X&O guy. If that's what it is, then people don't think you can connect and you can recruit. You have to do it all. Yeah. And when you are moving and you're getting these jobs, ask for more. The tasks that you have, do it so well that people want to give you more. Expand your growth. Right. Learn how to do the smallest thing in the program and take pride in doing that, like you have the biggest job. Because one day when you get a job, it's better to understand how to do everything and how the whole thing runs. Too often we put ourselves as assistants, well, we're just going to recruit. Uh-huh. So then you get that label, you know, or I don't like recruiting. You get that label, you know, I'm the relationship guy. Well, he just, you know, he's the one who can talk to the players, but he really can't coach them.
Uh-huh.
Be a teacher, ask for more on the floor, ask for more off the floor. Ask your head coach if you can sit in some meetings with him and see how things work. In your time of being an assistant coach, start to formulate your own plan. Put together your own blueprint of what you like your program to look like from a fundraising perspective. Who you're going to be on the floor, offensively and defensively. The things you don't like, create your plan. So often we spend so much time helping somebody else achieve their dreams. Yep. And we forget about ours. Yes, that's the most important thing. Whoever you're working for, you're supposed to work for them and do that. But you got to spend time on yourself. And a lot of people, if I walked in and say, okay, hey, Andrew, here's your, tell me about your core principles when you have your program. What are they? You haven't thought about it. What's your mission? What's the vision? You know, how are you going to evaluate your players? You know, what's practice going to look like? Are you going to give them 2 minutes for water, or you're going to have the jug just there? And like every little detail, you have time to start doing that. So now when you go into an interview process and you're interviewing, you know, you're speaking things that you believe in, and you're speaking about your program because it comes right out of your heart, your gut, your spirit. And a lot of times we are so into what our boss is doing. And when we go interview, right, we're speaking their language, not ours.
Right.
And you're probably not getting that job, you know, so that would be my advice.
That was really good. No, I really appreciate that for sure. That helps.
So you went from Bemidji State, you went down to Southwest Baptist State, which I believe is Missouri. And that was kind of your one trip to like East Coast, Southeast at least. And then how'd you make that leap to, you know, get into Cal State Northridge and kind of getting into more higher profile programs after your first two stops?
Well, I mean, when I was at Southwest Baptist, I was just there. We put our head down. We took over a job where they hadn't, I mean, it was just, they were awful. And again, I wasn't looking to go Division One. I mean, I had my goals, but you know, I just wanted to be the best I could be right there and help my boss turn a program around. We were able to do that, became one of the better teams in the country. Actually, the year before I went to Northridge, the same coach, Bobby Braswell, had talked to me that summer. He actually had a job open up like late, like August something. School was starting in a week at Southwest Baptist. And I remember thinking about it for a day, and I called him and said, Coach, you know, I can't do this. You know, I wouldn't do it to you if I was at Northridge and somebody called this late, you know. And think about that. Here's a guy, I wanted to be a Division I coach, and now I'm turning down this opportunity.
Wow.
A year later, though, he had another opening, and he called me and he said, you know what, that really stuck with me, and I'd love for you to come. And you know, I took the opportunity to go, and I was only there a year, and we signed like 7 or 8 guys that spring, which was a lot.
Wow.
Yeah, we won the league for the first time in the history of the program. And Jim Boylan had just gotten the Utah job. And I was from Utah, and I interviewed for the job. And, you know, I got that. And I wasn't planning on leaving Northridge after a year. And that Northridge team year two, they actually went to the tournament and lost to Memphis in the second round. But then I went to Utah, you know, and you know, but even in my experience, I mean, I went to Utah, we got it turned around really quick. We had a young team, you know, after 3 years, really, really young team. And gosh, 3 years there, we got fired. Crazy.
Oh, shoot.
And I, you know, I was the kind of guy, Bemidji State, we won the conference tournament. My first year as coach, we won the conference. Southwest Baptist year two, we're ranked 5th in the country. Go to Catholic Northridge, we win the league. Go to Utah my first year, we win the league. You know, so in my mind, I'm like,
yeah, it's easy. You win wherever you go.
I'm never going to get fired, you know? And then, you know, you go, all of a sudden turmoil hits and you're fired, you know? And I was out of a job for months. I was on my last leg. And at the very last minute, Mark Phelps, you know, I pretty much had to beg him to give me an interview because he was down the road. And by the grace of God, he did that. He hired me. He had already been there 5 years or so. We had 2 great years, and the AD came in, we're making a change, fired. Wow. You know, think about that. And then Arizona State, Herb Sendek came calling. Actually, I was asked to stay on at Drake as an assistant. And I did that for maybe a week. And out of the blue, Arizona State called. I went there, had 2 tremendous years. First year, before I got there, I think they were 8th or 9th in the league. My first year, we added 4 or 5 guys in the offseason. We finished 3rd, went to the tournament, got beat by Texas at the buzzer in Milwaukee at the Bradley Center. Second year, we graduated a lot of guys. I think they picked us
eighth. That was Jahi Carson.
Yeah. And then we came back my second year, graduated all those guys, and I think they picked us eighth or ninth. We finished fourth in the Pac-12. We got to the NIT. Herb had signed an extension, and at the end of the year, he got fired.
Brutal business.
Wow. And again, yeah. I was asked to stay on there, so I was on there for maybe a couple weeks, and Wojo from Marquette called me, and it was a great fit, and I was there for 5 years. So I've seen everything, you know. Yeah. Again, your career and success is never like this. It's windy. It's up. It's down. It's circular. You're going to go through a lot, you know.
There is no straight line in the basketball career or on the basketball court either, really, unless you're doing a Princeton cut. But speaking of seeing a lot of things, when you're at Utah, you had a freshman Marshall Henderson. Do you have any fun practice stories of him going jumpers going crazy? Because he, I mean, obviously everyone knows his Ole Miss run, and he's a real recognizable a guy and a supernova shooter. But do you have any funny stories of him, you know, in taking over a practice as freshman year, or did you kind of see those signs?
Well, Marshall is one of the most confident kids I've ever been around. People.
Oh yeah.
He's a freshman. He's a scrawny. I remember the first time, because I got to Utah, I got there, he had already committed, or no, when I got there, they were already recruiting him. I remember him walking. They were just bragging about this guy, Marshall Henderson. I'm like, man. So my expectation of what I thought he was going to look like and be was completely different when he walked in for his visit. I'm like, he walked in, I go, this is the guy that we've been talking about, right? He's scrawny, the hair. He was a beast. And, but, you know, Marshall, we're playing at UNLV 1 year, and his freshman year, and he had no fear. But on this day, he's sitting by me on the bench, and somebody on UNLV went baseline, dunked on our whole team. Right. I mean, it was a good play. And all of a sudden this dude jumps off the bench. He's like, yeah. And I grab him. I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, what? It was a good play, you know, but that was him, yeah. You know, cheering for the other team. But he hit like 5-6 threes. We win the game. You know, he was,
yeah, right.
he was fun to coach, and he was a great competitor.
So I love that story. Awesome, yeah. I love guys that just love basketball like that. But yeah. I mean, it's definitely wrong timing, I guess, but just the fact that he loved basketball that much, and you know, you see the passion, obviously. But
yeah, he's a hooper.
So you had Jahi for a year at Arizona State, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he was incredible for a bit there. Any sort of like times where the team just couldn't keep him contained, and you were like, "All right, Jahi, slow down. You can go by everybody for a layup on our team," like, or anything like that at Arizona.
Well, I mean, Jahi was great, man. Again, another guy that had so much confidence, and you know, he put that program on his back.
Yeah,
and he did some great things. He was, you know, so quick and so explosive. You know, I mean, as good as athlete as you would see, you know, I mean, his ability to play above the rim for a 5'11", 5'10 guy was incredible. You know, he had no fear.
It seems like he was a huge fan, to find those type of players. When you watch guys like that, is there anything that, like, you would pick out of their personality that, you know, because everybody's talented, but there's something that you see in them that you're kind of like, you know what, he's going to have that it factor.
Yeah. Kind of, I mean, real confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some guys have fake swagger.
Yeah.
You know, they talk a good game, but when the lights come on, they shrink.
Yeah.
You know, those guys, when the lights got on, they got bigger.
Yeah.
You know, and then the bigger the pressure, the better they were. You know, that's the huge difference.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect lead into you know, your most recent superstar scorer that you had for a handful of years there. You had the whole career of Marcus Howard, again, to watch him be an efficient, you know, shooting machine out there. Did you see a lot of like kind of, you know, similar traits in Marcus in terms of right when he came in? I saw he shot 55% from three on five attempts a game as a freshman. Like that's pretty impressive for 5'10" freshman.
Yeah. Marcus is just ahead of his age. You know, he was so mature even as a young guy. And he's a world-class scorer. Yeah. And he's been there since he was little. And I saw that. And I think, again, you know, go back to what I said earlier. Sometimes we put people in a box and we put people in the vase and we put the vase on top of the flower. And I spent a lot of time recruiting Marcus, and I, you know, he got recruited at a good level, but to me, he could have played anywhere. And, you know, people constantly wanted to talk, well, his size, he's just a shoot. The guy could do it all. He could handle, he could get his shot off on anybody. And, you know, when he committed to us at Arizona State, I thought he'd be the all-time leading scorer at Arizona State. You know, when I left and he came to Marquette with me, I thought he was going to be a great player. I mean, I thought he'd be an all-league guy. Did I think he was going to be the all-time leading scorer in the history of Marquette, the all-time leading scorer in the history of the Big East? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, think about the names that have gone through that league. I mean, it's incredible. And, you know, I think when people study the history of college and you really look into it, he had one of the best careers of anybody ever.
Yep.
And that's not talked about probably enough. And even in the NBA, I mean, when he got his time and minutes, especially end of the year, I mean, guys get 17, 18, 25. I mean, he can score the ball as good as anybody. And he had the it factor too, in terms of he had a real confidence. You know, I watched him one night. I'll never forget. We're playing Buffalo, and they were really good that year. I think they're in the top 25. We're playing them at home, and we, you know, bought them to come in.
Yeah.
And look at the stat sheet, and he had what do you have? I think he may have 5 or 7 points at halftime. Oh. My man scored 40 and a half. He had 40
in the rest of the game.
40 in the second half. We played USC 2 years ago in Orlando. And we took him out with maybe 6 minutes to go in the game. He had 52 points.
I remember that game.
You know, I mean, wow, he could have 60, you know, and against really good teams. I mean, he's just – he was elite.
Yeah, and he's always been efficient too. Like I said, like he came. You see a lot of guys that develop into really great scorers by their junior, senior year. But he came in right off the bat, efficient and shooting the lights out, kind of thing.
Yeah, and he came early. You know, he was 16 year old for most of that year.
What?
Think about that.
Oh wow,
yeah, that's unbelievable. That's cool. So then, you know, obviously your success at Marquette has kind of led you to this new opportunity, right? And getting your first head coaching gig at a big-time Division I school, a big-time conference, big-time city, you know, different changes happening, and then COVID happens. So can you walk us through kind of like what that experience was like? You obviously, you know, persevered through it and have had success through it. I saw you had the 12th ranked recruiting class at one point during COVID when all you could do was Zoom. But yeah, walk us through kind of how that, like, you know, that bright door opens and then it's kind of like all of a sudden it's raining, but you still got through.
Well, you know, again, it's a mindset. You know, although, you know, COVID happened, I never looked at it that way, you know, and one of the things we established really early was, you know, win the wait. And win the wait for me, WIN, means what's important now. And I, you know, when I got the job, I told our team, you know, while everybody's waiting and everybody's, you know, a lot of people are going to be down and depressed and rightfully so, we're going to find ways to win this moment and we're going to find ways to close the gap on everybody. So when we return to normalcy and we return to playing, people notice a difference in us. And you know, they can see that on the floor. They can see that in the classroom. They can see everything in our culture. So that was the first thing. We didn't want to do the woe is me. And I wasn't going to, man, my first year, I can't believe. No, my first year, guess what? We got some adversity. Good. Let's attack this. And even in adversity, there's so many chances and so many opportunities to do something really, really special. And that was our approach. We were going to win the weight. We're going to win the moment. And we were going to use this as an opportunity to get the program turned. And most of that was going to be a mental thing. And the second part of it for me was really the organization. You know, it wasn't like, if we get COVID, what do we do? No, when we get COVID, here's the plan. Uh-huh. We were on two pauses, right? But when the first pause hit, we already had our 10-day plan already in place. So once that hit, God came, all right, boom, we're right in COVID mode. Here's what our days look like. We're going to watch film a couple times a day with the guys. Game nights are going to be on Wednesday. We're going to get the bikes into their rooms. The guys who don't have COVID, they're going to have exercise bikes, weights, all that. They will do it on Zoom with our strength coach. Boom, 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 boom. And it's amazing. When we came out of COVID, we were better out of COVID than we were when we didn't have it, right? Again, organization, right? And that's what, when I go back to what I said, you know, years of planning, understanding that, you know, you things aren't always going to go how you plan, but if you are organized, you can combat adversity and you can combat a lot of these moments that seem to be so crazy. So that was, you know, that was really the plan and the structure. And, you know, when I took the job and then how we dealt with COVID.
That's great. How do you go about recruiting with COVID and stuff? Like, you can't go visit, you know, the games, you can't go to the high school, you can't go, you know, do the meet the mom and pop and, you know, have dinner or something. How did you guys kind of pull that off with just Zoom calls?
I just went back to my D2 days. You know, in Division II, you don't have the money to go everywhere.
Yep.
Right? And you didn't even have Zoom. You know, you had to just pound the phones and word of mouth and work it that way. And again, that's when I was really appreciative of my stops. And again, starting at the very bottom, like I said, it's important to understand every level, everything in the organization. You know, I've been at Bemidji State, I've been at Marquette. I mean, two complete extremes, but the Bemidji State experience really helped me during COVID because it's like, okay, this is how you recruit when you can't go out. Yeah. And that's what we did.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's huge. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, when they're going through their windy path of their basketball career, they don't realize that, like, you know, this stop that may not be the most ideal stop that they ever wanted may be the most valuable lessons that they're ever learning in terms of their future potential and their future coaching careers. So that's definitely a good lesson to take away. But one of your one of my favorite sayings that you have is pressure is a privilege. And I think, you know, obviously you've shown that so far in your time at LMU. And you've been bold in talking about, you know, we won't bring these guys back to, you know, glory. And like, they haven't been in the tournament since 1990. You want to kind of try to take a little bit of that real estate of LA and the local recruits and stuff. Walk us through that kind of, like, you know, the pressure is privilege and how you kind of like attack every day. And, you know, you're trying to evolve and get this LMU program to the next level.
Yeah. I mean, for me personally, I don't want to be around anything that's mediocre. Yeah. And I don't want to be anywhere where you're afraid to go for it. And you can, and that has been a humble way. That's a lot different than, well, we're the best and we're going to do this. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, this is what our ultimate goal should be. And there's no reason why we can't. To achieve that, right? Every single day, it comes down to our habits. So we can say what we want, but if our actions don't back that, we're not going to get that. So it's not an arrogant way that we should shoot for it. We have a great school. We have a great league. We have great coaches in this league. We have a lot to sell. We have a great location. And if we can every day come in and lay the right bricks, lay the right bricks, and every day we're going to lay the right brick. Every day I'm going to lay a brick. Every day I'm going to lay a brick. Every day I'm going to lay a perfect brick. Well, eventually you're going to look back and you're going to have a great house built. And that's what we want to do. All right. This is our home. Why would you want to be a part of anything that is not really good and special? Who wants that? And, you know, in terms of the pressure, you want pressure. I don't want to be anywhere where there's no expectation. That's a terrible place. And I tell the guys all the time, you know, hopefully one day we'll get to a point where when we get beat, people storm the court.
You know? that's a good goal to have.
That's you know, that's the kind of pressure that we want to create. But no one's going to put more pressure on us than we're going to put on ourselves. Yep. And when I say pressure is a privilege, it's not only just what the world thinks, it's what the kind of pressure we're applying to each other and how we accept that and understanding, you know what, man, wow, they're demanding more. The goals are higher. The standards are higher. Yeah, that's a privilege. You know, so that's the kind of a mindset that we want.
Yeah, that's, and that, I mean, that feels like that ties back to Bemidji State and, you know, taking them to a title kind of thing or winning the conference down there. Like, you know, you didn't have necessarily the pressure built in when you went there, but it kind of reminds me of last chance you know, Coach Mosley in East LA College and what he says of, you know, people saying that East LA wasn't a great job and him being like, well, I'm going to be there. So all of a sudden it's a good job now. Now they're a good program. And that seems like, you know, a mindset that you've always applied. And, you know, that's certainly something that people can take away. It's not where you are, it's what you make of it kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not only me, it's everybody within the organization believing that. Definitely. You know, at this level, you don't just win because of the basketball coach. The AD's got to believe it. He's got to work that way. The president's got to believe it. They've got to work that way. The board of trustees, they got to believe it. They got to work that way. The student body's got to believe it. It's creating belief throughout our whole university. And that's how you create greatness. It's not just through me. There's been a lot of good coaches. There's been, Loyola Marymount's had some great coaches. It's not that. It is the commitment and the passion that it comes behind that. Yeah. And, you know, I think right now we have both. And we have a commitment at the highest level. And people are ready for a winner. Now it's on us. It's on me. We got to do our part.
Definitely. No, I love that. And too, like when you're saying, you know, the brick by brick, you know, and that your culture is what holds it together. I had saw that and it's easy to believe in that, you know, when you're seeing somebody put that much effort into it and realizing, you know, it is like building a house. And then once you build that house, it's what the foundation is going to be held by is your culture. And I thought that was a great visual. As well as now, you know, it's really happening each year and every day you're truly seeing it. And when I watched the first video, when you first got hired with the players, you know, what they were talking about, like, oh, they were excited. But then after 1 year of watching their interviews and seeing them talk about how excited they are for you moving forward is just, it shows that this is true and this works and you really, truly live it, you know? So I'm excited to see kind of how you guys progress. And would you say, what is something, you know, as far as, you know, that you guys are kind of striving for, you know, for next season, as far as a big win or games that you're looking up forward to? Is there anybody on the schedule that you're really like excited to play and prove yourselves against?
Well, that's the one thing we don't do. And I talk to our guys all the time. Every game's a big game, period. It's a big game because it's our next game. Definitely. That's our thing. We don't do the, man, we're looking forward to playing them. And then we're not. Good programs, good organizations, championship teams don't function that way. Mm-hmm. Every game's a big game because it's the next game. And, you know, I tell my guys all the time, you know, we talk about possessions. Well, games are like that. You know, one game can determine your season in college basketball. Yep. So we look forward to every game. Awesome. And, you know, here we want to continue to improve our schedule. We want to play a tough schedule in the non-conference. And everybody on the schedule can beat us. Mm-hmm. That's facts. That is facts. You know, so it is having the right mindset that on every night, man, we got to bring it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the game doesn't start when you walk into the arena for the first time. The game starts, you know, that practice before the game. It starts the morning of shoot around. You know, so it's that mindset. It's keeping guys on edge, understanding that, again, going back to you got to win every moment, man. Mm-hmm. And moment by moment, you know, laying bricks, you know, that's how you build the house. It's not looking for, man, when we just get the, you know, once the basement's done, we'll fill. No, you got to, the next thing is the next thing. And the next thing is the most important thing, you know? So that's our philosophy.
That sounds Belichickian over there, the Patriot way, you know, next day is the next day to win and next guy up kind of thing. So now, I mean, the West Coast Conference now is much deeper, you know, they had a few years of quite a top heavy kind of kind of setup, but it's top to bottom. It's definitely improved over the last few years. And we're excited to see, you know, what you guys, what kind of noise you guys make the next few years over there. But NIL is obviously a new thing that, you know, is hopefully going to even the playing field a little bit even more in terms of making parity and conferences like WCC, you know, starting to, you know, threaten the Pac-12s and stuff like that. Can you share anything about, you know, kind of what that transition and that evolution with the new name, image likeness and what you guys are kind of doing to get ready for that? Or,
well, I think one, you know, I think it's great for the players. I think it's long time overdue. I think mm-hmm. it'll be a good thing for the game. You know, but I'll be honest, I think, you know, most people are still trying to figure it out, and we're in that boat. You know, so many people are, you got a lot of people acting like they know it. I mean, it's so fluid.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be that one. So, you know, yesterday we had an educational session with our guys and we're working through it together. But, you know, we're still figuring out how to do everything. You know, for us, like the one thing universally, you know, coaches can't help facilitate those deals. Right. So now if a kid gets something, we can help guide them, but we can't manufacture anything for them. You know, so it's just understanding those things and helping our guys be aware of what they can and can't do, and, you know, understanding the fine prints of things and that kind of stuff. But the other thing is that people need to understand, they don't just hand out deals. Mm-hmm. And some of these deals you're seeing early, I mean, a lot of these, maybe you're getting a drink deal, you know, or they're giving you a bottle, you know, you don't see a lot of numbers behind it because you know, from an optics standpoint, we want to make it look like, man, things are happening. They're not like, they don't just hand out sponsorships to everybody. I mean, even in the NBA and the NFL, and not everybody has a, so again, it's us as coaches and administrators getting a better grasp for it. And that's what we're trying to do right now. What we're not trying to do is act like we've got all the answers and we're the experts, because we're not. We're still trying to figure it out. I know I am.
Yeah, one thing Matthew mentioned was taxes and stuff. And I was like, dang, I didn't even think of that. Like a freshman getting you know, a big chunk of money and just not even thinking, like, oh, I got to put 30, 40, 50% of this away, depending on how much it is, right, for old Uncle Sam. So that's, I mean, that's a good learning lesson, too, for the guys as they're coming up. But, you know, hopefully we'll see, you know, guys take their brands to, you know, not necessarily going down the road to the other schools in L.A., but, you know, betting on themselves and trying to take over a program. And, you know, not necessarily, you know, you can make money wherever now at this point, technically, with the new rules. So that's great. We're excited to see what happens with that, especially with you guys. Is there anything you got going on this summer? Any like camps or anything you want to plug or anything like that?
You know, we didn't do any camps this summer just because it was too close to the COVID stuff.
Yeah.
LA's pretty restricted, but we are going to have a clinic, a coach's clinic. I believe it's going to be on the 30th of July. You know, so nice. That'll be great. And, you know, that's for all levels.
That'll be in LA?
At LMU. And
beautiful.
Guys can come in and, you know, we're going to show them how we practice. We'll do a chalk talk, you know, after that, and kind of just, I'm an open book, you know, this is kind of how we do things culture wise, this is how we implement things system wise. You know, so, July 30th, it'll be, you know, be pretty cool to get up and close with some coaches, cause we haven't been able to do that and share. And for us, it's an opportunity for us to learn from other people as well, but it'll be pretty cool.
Oh, that's great. That's a great opportunity for people, coaches coming up. I mean, hey, Coach Andy, you might want to take a flight out to LA on July 29th.
Yeah, come on, man.
you guys do anything virtually at all?
So last year, you know, we did a couple of virtual clinics. Mm-hmm. I won't do that this year. This year will be more, you know, we want to get back to being in person.
Definitely. Absolutely. That makes sense for sure. And, you know, I think anybody that can take advantage of that, that's out West, that listens, they need to. Because like I said, this is, you don't get this every day you know, Coach, like I said, you know, in speaking with many people asking, you know, for things, you know, either one of us, and you've come on here and, like you said, been an open book, but have shared some things that are definitely useful that, you know, if you're a coach or if you're a person, you can take this and apply it to yourself and, you know, see some success, you know, and also to find yourself. I think that's a major takeaway from today is, you know, doing that work to actually find yourself. And that work is, you know, start planning, organizing yourself. You know, so like I said, I appreciate all that because, you know, heck, I got a bunch of notes here, even though I'm like trying to look through and find what I want to ask. But that, you know, that really is something that, you know, you can definitely take and, you know, apply immediately. So really appreciate you for that. And, you know, I guess my one more question that I had is just about communication. And, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, on the floor and, you know, your job and everything, but how do you, you know, go about communicating what you're going to do and how you're going to, you know, coach your team with your family and kind of explaining like what their role is, you know, while being with you as you coach and, you know, go about your dream. How does that, how do you do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a good question. You know, last year was tough because my family didn't even get to see me coach in live because of COVID. It can be at the games. But they're every bit a part of what we do. You know, I have the guys in my house a lot. Awesome. You know, I want them to be around my family. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been pretty cool now with the gym opening. My kids will come to workouts.
Nice.
I love that. You know, I want our guys to see it. I want our kids to see it. You know, there's a lot of times where I'm not around. Like, I'm going to get off this and jump on a flight and go recruiting. I'll be gone the whole weekend. I was gone last weekend. So more we can have them around, the better, you know, because it gives them a better perspective of why I'm not around sometimes.
Yeah.
And what the big picture is, you know. So, you know, I don't see both of those are two separate things. I see those as one thing.
Awesome. And
when we recruit kids, I tell them all the time, you know, you called me on a Friday night and said you're bored, I'd say, hey, come over. You can come over, you can fall asleep on my couch, you can pour yourself a lemonade, you can make yourself a sandwich, you can play Xbox with my kids, never have to ask, and that's okay, right? Because that's how it should be.
Yeah,
that's awesome. When you get married, we're going to be at your wedding.
Awesome.
And that's my family, and that's everybody. So it's, and my family understands that all these guys that had come here, they're a part of us, not just Loyola Marymount, they're a part of the Johnsons. You know, so that's kind of how we do it.
Sure. Awesome, man. Like, that's, I know, what a lot of players like strive and want to be a part of. And so many aren't able to find a coach or are lucky enough to ever come across one that believes that. And when you do, you see it all flourish. So yeah, thanks for that. That's awesome. And I know a lot of coaches can take that. I hope we'll take that away.
But you know, and I'll say this to you, you know, like, and that sounds great. And I tell our guys too. But that, though, comes, I'm going to coach you hard, too.
Yep.
You know, why have a relationship? I mean, you can know I care about you, but why have that if I can't tell you the truth?
Yep.
You know, so, but you got to have both. And if you don't have a relationship with these guys, then you don't have permission to be real with them.
Yep.
And sometimes we want to be real with them, but we don't have the permission. The only way to have the permission, you got to invest.
Yep.
You know, so it goes both ways. And I tell them every day, like, when you come here, there's going to be a lot of days you walk out and like, man, I want to punch him in his face. But I know that guy loves me.
Yeah.
And I know why he pushed me today is for me to be my best. And that's two different things. Like, you're going to feel either way. You can walk out and go, gosh, man, they're always on me. Gosh, I have no relationship. I have no connection. This sucks. Or, man, they're on me. But, man, I like it because they're taking me to a place that I can't take myself, you know, and that's what I want our guys to feel like when they walk away from practice.
Well, absolutely. That reminds me of Bobby Huggins, and we spoke with Chase Harler, and he said, you know, he originally was taking Bobby's kind of style and his way of disciplining a little bit too to heart, but then, you know, he had a conversation with him and he realized, like, you know, he cares about him. And I think that's a very valuable, you know, thing. The best way to learn is when, you know, you can take a lot of critique if you know the guy really deep down is just trying to make you better. And, you know, it's not him picking on you or something silly like that. But yeah, do you have any other stories or Anything else you want?
I got it probably wrong. But I appreciate you guys having me on, and if we can ever do anything, our program for you guys, please.
Anytime you want to come on, you're welcome. If you want to just come on and just talk basketball, I know this is more of like the life story kind of pod, but we do a Thursday pod, which is more, you know, just talking topics and whatever. So if you ever want to just come on and talk hoops, or you got something to plug, or, you know, you guys make the tournament coming up here, feel free, man. We're open ears. But yeah, we can't thank you enough for, you know, being so candid and sharing some of your experiences with everyone.
Yeah, no problem, man. You guys have a great weekend, and stay in touch.
Definitely, Coach. Fly safe.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, that was Coach Johnson. Big thanks again to Coach Johnson for being so generous with his time and candid with his stories. It was really cool to hear his path to becoming his first head coaching position at LMU. And of course, we're hoping they have a good season coming up here. We'll be following along closely. And you can follow the podcast at BYRP365 on Twitter. Go ahead and subscribe and give it a review, and so you can get it into your podcast feed when they get released. And you can follow Andy at AJRoshan22 on Twitter. And you can follow myself at Lenny Biased on Twitter as well. But yeah, that'll do it for today. Hope everyone has a good Sunday and going into the week here, a good week. And we'll see you all Thursday. Peace.